Hello, welcome, 8123 podcast. We are back with another episode. If I sound like I am talking to my phone, because I am.
I am not.
Apologies for that, but you know, it's all good, man.
That's how we're living right now.
Yep. But what's going on?
You know. Just it's 115 out and having a good time, trying not to, burn alive.
Yeah, it's absolutely. So this week has been like the hottest week ever.
It's insane. Fucking terrible. I mean, we haven't been home for summer in like the longest time.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, and like any time that we were, you know, we were maybe only here for a couple of weeks. So
yeah.
To be here for the entire time.
I mean, I think the last time we had a full summer here was when we were writing Pioneer at the old office.
Yeah.
Right? Was that the last time?
I think maybe one time in before that, like one of the off years from Warped Tour, we might have been home like the summer after the release of American Candy or Lovely or Lonely. Well, one of those. But like I said, we were probably gone for at least a couple weeks.
Yeah.
Internationally or something. But
yeah, it's pretty terrible.
It's been brutal, hard place to live for a couple months and then really awesome for the rest of the time.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it's gonna get worse this month, and then hopefully in September. I'm down with the 90s. I can do the 90s.
Oh yeah.
90s are fine. When it's 120 and it says it's 130 inside of your car, everything's bad.
Yeah. But we thought we would go back to our roots, go back to our high school roots on this episode. We're talking about, actually, it kind of came from a Twitter trend that happened where people were posting their four most influential albums, and we hopped in on it. So that's what the episode's going to be about today. We can get into that here in a bit, but that is what we have to look forward to.
Yeah. I've wanted to do something like this for a while, because there's a few podcasts I listen to where like people like break down albums and just their favorite albums and whatever. Like there's a there's one I have that Adam Scott from Parks and Rec does with this guy Scott Aukerman, and they did U2, all of U2's albums, and then they did REM's album, and then all of REM's albums. And then they started doing Red Hot Chili Peppers, and then they realized they don't like the Red Hot Chili Peppers all that much. So after the first episode, they switched to now they're doing Talking Heads, all of Talking Heads' albums. It's so funny.
That's insane.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Awesome. Yeah. So, I mean, I've wanted to do something like this for a while. Maybe we can do it again at some point with some other albums we like.
Yeah.
But we're basing on high school albums right now.
Yeah.
The four that meant a lot to us.
Yeah. Before we get into the episode, a couple things. If you have not checked out Pillar, go to pillar.club. It is our fan club reimagined, a community where you can get access to tons of things that you can't get anywhere else. Unreleased songs, demos, B-sides, videos, additional episodes of this podcast, discounts on merchandise, exclusive merchandise, and more. We have a big event that we're planning for the end of August, where everybody that is on there will get access to that for free. So if you haven't checked it out, it's a great way to support us and keep the band going. It's pillar.club, and we've been having a really awesome time on there. So hopefully you guys will check it out.
Please do.
And then, before we get into it, one more message from a sponsor, and then we'll talk about our high school record. So, one of my most important records to me in high school was Where You Want to Be by Taking Back Sunday. And I was just obsessed with this record. I mean, I loved the first album. And then when this came out, this just made me like their number one fan. There was just something, the vocals, like Adam's vocals on this record just have so much emotion and so much like just uniqueness to it.
Yeah.
And his lyrics and just like saying things that people don't generally put in a song. And it's like fairly raw, but like a little more polished than the album before.
I remember it being like, wow, this sounds so fucking good.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, I remember the debate when John left. It was like,
yeah,
was John the guy that like made everything great? And then and then this came out and it was like, oh no, they can do it without him, even though he's back again. But
yeah.
I mean, this record was fucking so good.
Yeah, I mean, every single song, I mean, looking at the track listing now, I mean, this has to be my favorite of their album.
Like, when this came out, this song, Decade Under Their Influence?
Yeah.
Like, this video was so cool.
Yeah. It was insane.
It was on that, like, track, and it was just circling around them the whole time, and it just was so cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say this definitely came out. So the album was released July 27th, 2004. So I remember being in San Diego when it came out on vacation with my family. And I went to Tower Records on Monday night at midnight because albums came out on Tuesdays then, and bought it right when it was released, and we just listened to it nonstop. And I think it really catapulted me into becoming obsessed with bands as opposed to like just being a fan. I feel like albums before this, like early Blink records and like Newfound Glory records and stuff, I was really into, but it didn't feel like it was mine. It was like I discovered it through my older brothers and stuff.
Yeah.
And Taking Back Sunday was like this album. It was like my thing that I was obsessed with.
It's the same thing for me. Exactly. Like I learned so many bands from my brother because he was going to shows. You know, I remember hearing about Jimmy Eat World when I was like 10, and Rufio and Newfound Glory and Thrice in like 2000. And then he kind of got into like more obscure stuff, and Taking Back Sunday was like my first thing. I was like, fuck yeah, this is mine.
Yeah.
What was your favorite song on the record?
180 by Summer.
All right, let's get that one going.
It's just the like intro and the vocals come in so fast. It's just like,
oh yeah, they still play this one a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that song is fucking kick ass.
So good. So I would say this one, you know, just because it's so good from front to back, I think because of Adam's vocals, it was just such an impactful thing for me, and because it felt like my band.
When I got this record, it was the same thing. I picked it up maybe not Tower. What was the other one? Warehouse?
Warehouse Records.
Yeah, and I got that like the week it came out, and you didn't play video games, but Xbox, I think, was the first gaming system where you could like put CDs in, and then like some games you could like listen to them as you were playing whatever game. And I got this record, and I had that, and then I had White Pony from Deftones for a while, and I played this snowboarding game like that whole summer. And so this was definitely definitely the record of that summer and a while, because I was fake snowboarding.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Cool. Well, what is your?
I'm going to go with my first pick is Weatherbox, American Art. And you showed me Weatherbox, and I think I heard this in 2006.
Probably.
Here, I'll play a second of Trippin' the Life Fantastic. So yeah, you showed me them probably when I met you in like 2005, and he was in a band. The singer Brian was in a band called My American Heart, and you got demos from him on AOL or something. You want to explain?
he was in this band called My American Heart that I was just out. I mean, they were the reason that I really wanted to be in a band, and I was so obsessed with them. And he was in the band for only like 6 months or so, but he recorded two songs with them, and he did like backup vocals on it, and it was really awesome. And then he began this band called Weatherbox, and they only put out one song online, and I thought it was super awesome. And then they had a whole EP, like a 7-song EP. But they were only like selling it as burnt CDs at their shows, and they weren't touring. They were only playing in San Diego. So I messaged him on, he had his AOL, screen name on their MySpace page, I think. And I messaged him and just told him I was such a fan. And he sent me the whole thing, and I passed it around to all my friends, and was just obsessed with it. And I would say like a big thing with this band is it was definitely a little bit outside of the box of what all of us were listening to at the time, where we were very into kind of like what like music you consider to be part of the Warped Tour scene, you know. Taking Back Sunday, The Used, Blink 182, Newfound Glory. And this band, it was just different. It was raw. It was, I guess it's like what to us would we considered like indie rock or something. You know, it was very different.
I mean, the biggest thing, it was like one of the first bands for me that I like listened to the lyrics, because he was talking about like just when you're, you know, a late teen, you're just thinking about all sorts of stuff. So he's talking about drugs and songs, and he's like questioning God, and just there's a song called Adam Smash, and you're just like all these thoughts that maybe you haven't really thought of really stick out. It was kind of the first thing I listened to that was like spoke to me in that kind of way. We also covered this song before the American Candy Tour. The song's called The Drugs. It's a great song. It will take a while to kind of get into it.
Yeah, I've got to take the intro before the vocals is very long.
2 minutes or something.
It was like so powerful for an acoustic song. Like, it's such a simple song, so powerful. It's just definitely a record that made you think about life in a way that, you know, you hadn't before. So
yeah.
And just like musically, it was very like the parts would be like challenging to play, you know. Yeah. Like it was like out, like the drum parts are weird.
It's a little proggy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I loved it, and it was, yeah. It reminds me of like when we started too as a band.
Yeah.
You gave me the, you know, couple songs, before the record came out. I think it was like 5 or 6 songs, like you're saying. And then Trip in the Life Fantastic got put on MySpace like the week the band started. And we were just jamming it really hard. So yeah, it's like, it's that time of my life too. So, all right. I'm going to pick your next one. Is that cool?
Yeah.
All right.
Crazy intro.
Dude, it's so
record.
Good. This record fucked me up.
So,
all right, we gotta get to the part. So sick.
So good. So this is the Used self-titled album. This is their first record. And I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. It's if you have not listened to it and you're remotely into Warped Tour kind of music, I guess is just a blanket term. I mean, it's probably the best record of the genre.
I stand by that. So this came out June 25th, 2002. So this would have been on, I think they probably were on Warped Tour, but I remember getting it like the week it came out, because Taste of Ink was like kind of taking over MTV2, and seeing it, I was like, oh, that was cool. And then getting this album and just the way that started, I had never heard something like that wild. Like I'd listened to bands that like screamed and stuff, but just something about the way that starts was like, it was something else. And then, you know, you can go from a song like that into something like this on the same album. And it just was like so great.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something about, I mean, his vocal melodies and his, like, the way that he delivers the words is just like, you can't not pay attention to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. I mean, this just blew my mind that it was possible to make something this good. I mean, the like level of musicality and songwriting compared to other bands in the genre at the time, this is just miles above it. And I was just so obsessed. And, you know, it was definitely one of those records that, like, playing it in the car while my mom is driving me around, it's like,
she's pissed off.
what are you listening to?
Totally. For sure.
And I remember my mom saying something like she thought that like Tim would be into something like this. Like, it was almost along the lines of like, oh no, like I thought that like
you weren't gonna be
you were like, they're like this like sweet kid, mm-hmm. you know.
And then you're 12 and you're like, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah. And yeah, so good.
Well, and it's like crazy, because they ended up putting a documentary out a couple years after that record came out, And there's this guy that shows up a lot. His name's Craig Aronson, which we've talked a lot about on the podcast. And he was their A&R guy. And yeah, I remember seeing him in that documentary. And then, you know, almost 10 years later or 10-ish years later, we're pulling up in his office and he's talking to us about, you know, signing to that same label. So that was, it was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I would just say generally this, you know, this album changed the genre, you know, this album changed the scene. This influenced every single band mm-hmm. in such a major way. And, you know, I'd say any band that's like heavy that began after 2008 or something, or, you know, 2007, if they're saying that they weren't trying to rip off the Used, they're probably lying. So, wonderful, wonderful band. So, check out the self-titled record.
All right. My next one is this. We're going to keep with the heavy for a second. This is Glassjaw. Everything you need, you've ever wanted to know, or everything you've ever wanted to know about Silence is what that record's called. And they are a crazy band for me because I remember so many of my favorite bands at the time were, so this came out in 2000, would talk about them. And I remember trying to listen to it, and I was just like, didn't understand it. I was like, this is fucking crazy. He sings so bizarre, and it just sounds wild. And then they were one of those bands that just kept on trying, and one day it clicked. And I just got super, super obsessed, where I had photos of them on my wall, and, you know, I was going on websites and, like, finding bootlegged live versions of stuff because they had already broken up, and I was like, I'm never going to see them. Fuck! And, yeah, I got super, super, super obsessed. If you ever got into a band called Head Automatica, I'm not sure if anyone did, but Daryl Palumbo is the singer of that band as well. But, yeah, they're just, like, this crazy, thrashy, New York hardcore band that I just loved so much. And I tried to get you into them. I think you pretended for a few years, but...
No, I like Worship and Tribute, which would have been the next record, right?
Yeah.
I really like that record. The first one, I just couldn't really get into it. I feel like it's one of those things where it's like it had to like hit you at the right time.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't around for that. But I feel like Worship and Tribute is a more like palatable version of that first record.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. This one just was like what else is on this? This song's so crazy. I'm playing all the crazy ones to scare everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that record so much. It just felt like so much like New York. I don't know if that means that, like, there's some bands that just kind of feel like that. And it just makes me think of that for some reason. Okay, I will pull up your next one real quick. All right, here we go.
This is a band that I was not into at first.
Is this what you were thinking?
Oh yeah. So this is Blink-182, and it is their untitled album.
Yep.
And I was always kind of a passive Blink-182 fan. I enjoyed some of like the big, like when like the singles were on MTV or heard them on the radio. I liked it enough. I like never like sat with an album.
Well, they were so many people's like favorite band, and
yeah,
I was just like, yeah, no, I like them, but same thing. Just something about it with this like they weren't my favorite.
Yeah. This record, the untitled album, is very different than anything else I've ever done. The songs are just incredible and catchy and fun. But then there's just this other element to it where it's very experimental. It's very like going in all these different directions, but it's just like weaved together perfectly. Where like the second that you feel like it's kind of going in this, like what's going on, then there's this big catchy part that happens. And, it's just like perfectly put together. You know, you can really hear a bunch of their influences on it.
I'll play this one. Like, they got Robert Smith to be on their album. Like, sing this whole song. It's a Cure song. I mean, it's kind of just a Cure song.
Yeah. It's an awesome song.
It's so good.
And one of the cool things about this record, too, so they recorded it in a house. They basically, like, brought all the equipment in and built a studio and a house, and they wrote it, and they lived there and worked on it for like a year. And they were posting like video updates all the time from it, and you like really heard a bunch of it. But you were seeing it just like as being somebody that was in a band or like wanted to be in a band. It just looked like the coolest thing you could ever possibly do.
Mm-hmm.
Just like taking over this house and. You know, they would be just doing all this like interesting stuff with like recording guitars through a Leslie speaker, like an organ speaker, recording drums, like in all sorts of different rooms in the house. And, it was just incredible. And, definitely inspiring. And when we went to do American Candy, kind of where the idea came from to do it how we did was really based on that record and how that was done. So
I remember when that record came out, it made me realize like how differently I thought of music than a lot of my friends, because I remember it coming out and so many people being like, what the fuck is this? And I remember being so pumped. It was like the first, like we were saying, it's like the first time I was really excited about a Blink-182 record. I was like, it's so fucking good. A couple friends in particular just being like, oh, and they were huge Blink fans. So I guess when people change, people don't like it, but I loved it.
Yeah. And just like the like look they have, like all the videos, like everything was just so awesome.
Totally. Yeah.
I would say that like it's still a record that we reference for things now. You know,
totally.
I would say like on Lovely or Lonely and this new record, like those two records probably in particular, there's definitely a couple like moments where we're kind of not really referencing the songs themselves, but just like the spirit of like how to have a catchy song, but have these interesting parts that are outside of the norm.
Totally. Cool. Well, I'm going to go with the next one. This is Say Anything Is a Real Boy. So my brother showed me this record in 2004, and I just remember being like, that's what I thought indie rock was. And I know I was like, I guess I was off because indie rock was something else, like Death Cab for Cutie or whatever. But this was like the coolest fucking thing I thought was out there. It was such a bizarre album, and But yeah, like you, with a lot of the stuff, like catchy, but the songs go all over the place, and there's like a opera theme kind of throughout it. And Max Bemis, their singer, was struggling a lot through this album, and like it starts with this, him talking to his therapist. And it was just like,
yep.
It was like, this guy's got a lot going on. And yeah, I mean, I saw them a few times on this record and they blew me away every time. And yeah, lyrically super bizarre, and like funny at some points and also super serious. And,
the lyrics to this record are unlike any other band or album that I've ever heard then or since. It's very much, yeah, the signature thing that was happening, and nothing like you've ever heard before.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting. I'm not a lyric guy, and I keep referencing lyrics, I guess, during this. But yeah, I mean, they're just, I've had this conversation with John a few times. It's like, it is, how far can you go with comedy in songs without it feeling lame? And I feel like this record nails it, where it's like, it's not funny, but it's just like, holy shit, did you just say that? And it's said in such a way that you laugh, but it's not a joke. Yeah, check this record out. What else is, let me play something. Yeah. They have like Weatherbox and them do a similar thing.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I love that band. Cool. Well, wait, that's not what I want.
No. Hopping into the last record.
We both picked it.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the one that we both picked, and I remember when we went and bought this record together, actually.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a funny thing. So we went to San Diego on vacation with my family, and my mom gave us like $200 for the day to go to SeaWorld, I believe.
Yes.
And we decided we wouldn't go, and that we would spend the money on buying albums, and then we would just drive around all day and listen to it, and then tell her that we went. Our idea is that we would be gone as long of the time that we should have been.
Yeah.
If we would have went, and we went and bought this record and a whole bunch of other ones, and then we just listened to it on repeat. Yeah, pretty funny.
So this is Dog Problems by The Format. So you can definitely hear where their singer Nate goes later. He starts a band called Fun. And there's definitely elements of this album that end up being in the later band. But I had never heard anything like this before. I don't even know. I still don't know what it's called. I remember trying to type in like, I thought it was like big band, but I would look up big band. I was like, that's not what that is. And then like, I just couldn't nail what it was, but it just was so good. And it's kind of a concept album. And, yeah, it blew me away the first time I heard it. So
yeah. And it's like very specific at times, you know, where kind of the gist of the record is like, it's a breakup record. And dog problems is, I guess, the gist that I always got from it, where he talks about in songs, is like they had like moved in together and gotten dogs, yeah. You know, and then when you break up, what happens to the dog?
Yeah.
And obviously the whole record is not as like specific as that, but definitely like some interesting topics and very like specific lyrics that are awesome. And they're from Phoenix, so there's a handful of references it, yeah. about coming back home to Arizona and things like that. But overall, such a great record. If you were ever into fun, you would love this, I think.
Yeah, and like they have a song. So they
if,
were on
if
a,
you if you weren't,
they were on a major label, and then they got off their label. And this song's about that. And in a weird way, it's now listening to it, I'm like, oh, I know exactly what the fuck they're talking about. But they were like one of the first bands that I knew that I was really into that totally did it on their own. They put this record out by themselves and recorded it on their own dime and everything. So, yeah, I mean, it kind of foreshadowed our future in a weird way. And realize that some band from Arizona can do it too. So, yeah. But just like I remember, there's so many instruments that are on this album that I had never heard before. And I remember just being obsessed with like they'd post a photo on their website, and there'd be all these keyboards in the back of like Rhodes and Wurlitzers and weird synths and stuff. And I was like trying to look in what those were because I was like, those look so cool. And like all the photos that they had for it just felt so like old school, but I didn't know what that even was at the time. And yeah, it was so cool and such a different type of album that I had ever heard before. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. And it reminds me again of right around the time we started. I think, yeah, we on that trip to San Diego is the trip that I met John on. So we took all those CDs and we were listening to them nonstop, and then a few days later I met John, so I think about that too. So very cool.
Yeah, so those are our records that impacted us in high school. Definitely probably some things that you guys haven't heard potentially, so go and take a listen, and you might have 7 new records that you love. Maybe 6. maybe you won't be into the Glasshouse record.
You don't know that.
What, like me. Yeah, why don't you guys, after you listen to the episode, if you feel like it, send me and Garrett a tweet with the 4 records that impacted all of you in high school. We'd love to hear it. Yeah, heck yeah. Well, thanks for listening. Hopefully, you guys found out about some new records today.
Yeah.
So we will be back soon with another episode.
Here's the outro.
Roll it.